Good morning. Am I on time? I was sitting there at my desk, blithely whiling away the hours, thinking that it was 8:30. Suddenly I woke up and I realized it's only 8:30 if you're in New Orleans, which we're not. Welcome to CSIS. I want to ask you to do two things. One is make sure you have a copy of the report with you. It'll make it a lot easier to follow along. I feel like a professor when I say that. The second is please silence your electronic devices, which I need to do that with mine, so that it won't make noise while we're talking here. I'm David Berto. I serve as the director of the CSIS Defense Industrial Initiatives Group. I want to welcome you this morning to the Center for Strategic and International Studies as we roll out the latest in our U.S. Federal Professional Services Industry reports. With me today is Greg Sanders, who is the lead author of our report, and some of the other staff as well. I want to thank all of them for the superb work that was done on this. This is the fourth in our series, and I want to extend thanks to the Professional Services Council, who got us started on this path originally some years back. This is the latest year for which we have the data. It goes from 1995 through fiscal year 2009. It takes the federal system a little while to catch up, so it'll be a bit before we have FY10 data. This is my device. Let's see what I do with it. Yes, that'll take care of it. What is the professional services industrial base? It's not what we typically think of in terms of an industrial base, although I should note that most of the companies that we do think of in the government industrial base are actually very prominently featured in the services industrial base as well. What it is all of the companies and the individuals who provide contract services to the U.S. federal government, except for three areas. One is those things that are defined in the federal procurement data system as products. We exclude all of those, and there's a category that gets entered in for that. The second is contracts that are related to facilities construction itself or to the management of that construction. We don't count those. The third is patient-related medical or healthcare services. We take that out as well. Everything else is in here, including R&D. Which in the federal procurement data system is defined as a service and which even DOD includes in its data as a service. As I said, we use the FPDS, the federal procurement data system, as our primary source of data here. We've been relying on them for quite some time. I think, Greg, it's fair to say that the FPDS continues to improve with each passing year, but it still has a long way to go. Because what you have is thousands of people entering data without regard to what any of the other people have done, and so we're captive of data entry, but it is dramatically improving over time. We crosswalk all the FPDS service categories into five broad areas: information and communications technology, which we call ICT, professional administrative and management support, which we call PAMS, comfortably, R&D, research and development, facilities-related services, FRS, and equipment-related services, ERS. We also have our own definition of competition. We define full competition as full and open competition for which there were two or more bidders, and you'll see as I look at some of the competition data what that implies. We also, this year, for the first time, have broken out competition with only one bidder into whether it was limited competition and only one bidder bid, or whether there was full and open competition and only one bidder bid. I also should note that a couple of our tables didn't get all of the constant dollar framework, and we have errata sheets and stickers noted in your reports there. The electronic version of the report will be up to date. But otherwise, all the dollars in this report are constant FY09 dollars. That's a change from what we've done in the past, where we allowed you to do the arithmetic to equate them. Now we've actually done that for you. Here's some key takeaway points, and you'll find these in the executive summary starting at the beginning. And for each of the charts in the group view graphs here, I've noted the page number. You can find them on the report. So it's Roman numeral page 10 for the first one on here. Total federal spending and services contracts continue to rise. You can see it in the upper left-hand chart there, despite efforts to reduce it. And competition percentage has roughly been steady all the way since over the last 5 years, 2005. We'll come back to competition later. In the middle chart on the top column, which is page 11, Roman numeral page, professional administrative and management services continues to grow faster than overall services spending. On the upper right chart, DOD still dominates. It's kind of the orangish color there, although there are other agencies that have significant portions as well, the Energy Department, NASA, and the Department of Homeland Security. The lower left chart, page 14 in your Roman numerals, is the number of contractors, and you see that in 2009, the total number of contractors actually fell. This is the first time this has ever happened. But the part that got smaller is the upper part of that chart, and that's those who bid only on contracts under $25,000. This is not actually unexpected or unexplained, given the nature of the economic downturn and the fact that some of these companies would no longer be in the government business. And the bottom right chart, page 14 also in your Roman numerals, shows the size of contractors in our database. Medium-sized contractors, which is the middle, the green, continues to be a smaller percentage. That's been true. That chart goes 1995 to 2009. Their dollars continue to go up, but the percentage of total contracts won by those contractors goes down over time. In your report on page 50, I want to set this in context. Now, the report, this is fairly late, but it's useful in the briefing this morning to put it at the front end. Total federal discretionary spending is on the left, so it's essentially $1.4 trillion is your top number there. And if you look, 2009, we're a little over $1.2 trillion in total federal discretionary spending. So you can see that going up, roughly doubling since 1995. On the right, you have the percentages. If you look at the red line that cuts across the middle of the bottom there, that's the percentage of total federal spending, discretionary spending, that has been spent on services. And it's been fairly steady since 1995, essentially hovering in the 18 to 22% range over that whole period of time. So while federal spending has doubled, so has the amount on services contracting. But this debunks the common view that services contracting has gone up faster than federal spending has gone up. It's essentially been roughly the same. The top line, the green line, actually, is the percentage of total contract dollars spent on services. And there you see it's fluctuated a good bit more than the basic percentage of total discretionary spending, from a high of near 70% back in FY 2000 to a low of slightly under 50% last year in FY 08. And so the percent of dollars, contract dollars spent on services, has fluctuated more than the percent of total discretionary spending on services. One of the things that we track is contract actions and the average size of contract actions. Not surprisingly, the number of contract actions has skyrocketed. Surprisingly, though, that's much more been true in the last few years than it was in the 1990s. I say it's surprising because I would have expected it to skyrocket as soon as we expanded the use of government-wide acquisition contracts and schedules, and yet it wasn't until 03 and 04 that you saw the number of contract actions begin to take off as much as it did. Now, there were some counting changes that occurred in FPDS back in 03, and that accounts for some of that as well. The average value of the contract actions you see has correspondingly gone down, and that's your bars in the middle there. This is page 33 in your report. It's growth trends both across the entire government and by category. So you see the total spending's gone up from under $150 billion, that's in FY09 dollars in 1995, to about $280 billion last year, FY09. In terms of the right-hand side, you see the columns, the 15-year compound annual growth rate and the 5-year compound annual growth rate. That's the CAGR. I'll call it the rate for most of the time here. It ranges from, as you can see, 9.2%, which is the 15-year combined annual growth rate for professional administrative and management services. That's been by far the highest growing portion, if you will, over that entire 15-year period, to a low of just 1% in information and communications technology over the last 5 years. The category called other, of course, has percentages here as well, but as you can see, it's a pretty small portion of the total. We have seen considerable increase in diversification in terms of the companies that participate in this market. The table on the left, 1995, for instance, you'll see that of the companies who are in the information and communications technology section, the ICT, 33% of them also had work under PAMS, or professional administrative and management services contracts, 9% in facilities related. By 2009, that had grown to 45% from 33% in 1995 and 16% from 9%. So what you see is companies are getting into more and more of multiple arenas here in terms of the overall businesses, and you see similar patterns across the board. This chart compares DOD and what we call civilian agencies, which really mean non-DOD agencies. So the left-hand side is DOD. You can see that primarily the biggest growth over 15 years has been in R&D, 7.4%, and informations and communications technology, 7.9%. But over the last 5 years, it's been professional administrative, 12.6%. and equipment-related, 11.7%. For the civilian, the non-DOD agencies on the right, professional administrative and management is the biggest over the 15-year period. Equipment-related services is the largest growth over the last 5 years. Now we've normalized this by agencies, so you can see kind of the way each of the big agencies break down. We've got DOD, Energy Department, NASA, DHS, Health and Human Services, GSA, and then for comparison purposes, your total U.S. government portion, if you will. And you'll see, for instance, that DOE and GSA, by far the highest percentages in facilities-related services. This is the way most of the DOE M&O contracts are categorized in FPDS, and so that's why that category dominates. You can see that R&D is a bigger portion, for instance, of the NASA budget. That's the green line of the third set of columns there. This compares 07 and 09, by the way, so you just see the changes over the last few years. And you see that professional administrative and management is by far the biggest portion of DHS and Health and Human Services. These are what we call our river charts. They let you track sort of the changes over time from 1995 through 2009. The top chart is by contracting vehicles, so you see essentially that by far the biggest chunk, that's that kind of orangish column in the middle, is modified definitive contracts. The definitive contract being at the bottom, and then every task order or being a mod to that would, so basically those bottom two are your definitive contracts. Your indefinite delivery, indefinite quantity contracts are your purple line and your blue line in the middle there. So you can see those have grown considerably as a percentage over time as well. The bottom chart shows it by number of contract actions as opposed to dollars, and you see there that now the change is considerable. The purple single award indefinite delivery contracts is much more in terms of number of contract actions, even though it's actually pretty large now in terms of number of dollars as well. The green, which is your purchase orders, obviously, by number of contract actions is enormously big, but in terms of dollars, you can see in the top chart is actually quite small. This chart's on page 15 in your report. It's the value by your categories across the agencies by contract type. You can see that, for instance, R&D contracts tend to be much more modified definitive contracts, whereas equipment-related services, a much larger percentage is in single award indefinite delivery contracts. There's a lot of data on these charts. I'm not expecting you to there's not going to be a quiz at the end, right? But I want to give you a flavor of everything that's in the report, so as you go through it, you'll know how to get out of it what you're looking for here. This is by customer, and the contract type by customer. You can see the DOE, of course, uses primarily modified definitive contracts. They are very rare in the Department of Health and Human Services. Or rather in the Department of Homeland Security, and more common across. So you can see basically each agency is tailoring its use of contracts for the type of work it requires and the type of contractors it has. Now we look at the what we call the funding scheme, fixed price, cost-based, et cetera, across all of the federal government, and this is by dollar value. Roughly under 40%, around 35-36% is fixed price contract now. And this has been fairly steady over the 15-year period that we've been tracking this. Roughly another 40% is in cost reimbursement. That's the green area. This is actually down over the period of time, replaced somewhat by an increase in time and materials, but replaced most by, you'll notice the light blue at the top, combination. That is, contracts that actually have multiple price schemes built into them. And these get categorized as a combination in FPDS. We can't break down how much of each of those is actually fixed price, how much is time and materials, how much is otherwise cost-based, and that's by far the largest growing portion. But I think the remarkable thing to me here is the stability over time of fixed price and cost-based contracting, and it says to me that in the aggregate, we've reached a level that's about, that's working, if you will, in terms of meeting the government's needs. Again, looking at value this time by category, we see that in each of the categories, information, administrative and management, R&D, equipment and facilities, it varies in terms of what part is fixed price and what part is cost reimbursement. Not surprising, R&D is primarily cost reimbursable. That makes sense given that you're doing research because you don't actually know what it is you want to do. On the other hand, facilities related, which works much more in the fixed price arena, that reflects in the data as well. Now, by agency, you see the same thing. Here, DOD is the biggest in terms of the combination, the one that I mentioned that mixes both cost reimbursable and fixed price contracts. And you can see the other agencies, DOE and NASA, tend to be much more oriented towards cost reimbursement, GSA much more towards fixed price. That's consistent with the kind of work being done under those services contracts. Now let's look at competition. We've actually broken this down differently than we've done in the past, and I actually have to give thanks to Jack Gansler, who has pounded on me relentlessly on this point, and finally I yielded and did the additional amount of research. The bottom line here is full and open competition with two or more bidders. Now keep in mind, this is services contracts. This is not for products. That has been fairly steady around the 40% level for the entire 15-year period that we've been looking at here. The next level up is what we call limited competition with multiple offers. Limited competition means the competition is restricted in some way. Typically, this is small business set-asides. That's the most common form of limited competition. And multiple offers meaning more than one bidder has come in. That's, in the early days, was not tracked very well, but has been roughly about 10% for the last decade or more. The third level up, the very lightest blue, or almost a blue-gray, if you will, is competition with a single offer. Now, here I have combined both full and open competition and limited, that is, set-aside competition, for which there was only one bidder. And I think, Greg, I'm right that about two-thirds of that is full and open competition with just a single bidder. Now, we haven't broken this data down into any further detail yet, and as we look at each of the agencies, we might investigate this, because it strikes me that in the services business, if you've got full and open competition and only one bidder, somebody's not doing something right. We really should have a little more competition in that arena. And then on up from there, the light green, which is your fifth area up, is essentially the CECA exceptions for unique sources. That's a lot of your federally funded R&D center contract work that goes into that area, including, of course, the DOE labs. Looking at data now by category, by contract actions, you'll see that full competition, not surprisingly, tends to be higher in areas of professional administrative and management, equipment related, and facilities rated, lower in R&D. Now looking at it by customer, You'll see that, in fact, full competition is much bigger in DOE, a much higher percentage in DOE, a much smaller percentage in the Department of Homeland Security, DHS, which is your fourth set of columns over there. And DOD tends to be about the federal government average for most of these categories. Of course, since DOD is two-thirds of the total dollars, it would be pretty difficult for them not to be about the same as the average. This chart is almost self-explanatory. By size of contract, by far the majority of the contracts are less than $250,000, and only a very small handful sit in the greater than $25 million even. In fact, they're so small, they almost don't even make a blip on the chart in the top there. You'd actually, I think it's, there are 900, in 2009, there are 951 contracts between $25 million and $100 million, so it does make a little bitty blip right there, if you will. There are 205 contracts in the range of $100 million to $500 million, and there are 45 contracts greater than $500 million. So it rounds off to zero on this chart, although, as you can see from the bottom, it doesn't round off to zero in terms of dollars, where you have roughly 20% of the dollars are in those 45 contracts greater than $500 million. Roughly 20% of the dollars are in those 205 contracts between $100 and $500 million. And a little under 20% of the dollars between $25 and $100 million. So well over half of the money is essentially in 1,200 contracts out of about 700,000. Now let's look at who's providing these services. Total number of companies, a little under 120,000, of which about 40,000 compete in the above $25,000 category, and almost 80,000 only compete for very small contracts. These are the mom-and-pop operations that supply services across America. It's a huge number of small businesses, but they add up to a pretty small percentage of the dollars. As I said, what's really interesting here is the decline in 2009 of the small companies. We eagerly await our 2010 data to see if that trend is a trend or it's only an anomaly based upon the economy last year. Let's look now at the small, medium, and large contractors. We actually redefined medium this year. Up to now, it's been the above small business threshold up to $1 billion in annual total revenue. And that's revenue by company, not revenue from services contracts, if you will. This year, because the numbers were changing, we actually increased that from $1 billion to $3 billion. Now, you'd say $3 billion is hardly small. All right, actually, $1 billion is hardly small in my category in terms of personal life. What we found, though, was that we were unfairly comparing sort of the larger mid-sized companies with the really big companies, and so we moved the cap to do that. We've actually broken down, and you'll see in the detailed reports by agency, we've broken down so that you still have the small business to $1 billion and then $1 billion to $3 billion as you go forward. What you'll see is the number of contractors, of course, is quite small in the large contractor area. It's well under 1% of 1,000 as the number of the total. But in terms of the dollars, it's a whole different story. Small businesses, of course, are still, this is actually not number of dollars. This is number of small, medium, and large contractors in the industry. I've broken down my medium size. The green area is the number in the $1 to $3 billion category, and the purple area is the small business to $1 billion, right?
This one is based on how big of the contract they take.
How big of the contract? Oh, which ones? What size they take? Some medium-sized firms only undertake contracts under 25,000. There are 17,000 of them in that area. Here's my total number of dollars, if you will. This is by dollars. Large contractors are taking roughly half. Small business is a success story here. You can actually see that the Small Business Set-Aside program has come up from just under 20% in 1995 to just over 20% in 2009. And so by this standard, the Small Business Set-Aside program in the $280 billion that the federal government spends on services contracts is meeting its goals and is a success. By category, you can see that large businesses, which are the green, dominate in the R&D arena, slightly above their share in information and communications technology and equipment-related services, whereas medium contractors are the largest in professional administrative and management services and in facilities-related services. And small businesses have the highest in information and communications technology and facilities-related services. Looking at it by agency, large contractors have the predominance at DOE and NASA and DOD, less dominant at the Department of Homeland Security, Health and Human Services, and GSA, where medium-sized contractors play a much larger percentage role. These are your top contractors by dollars and categories. Keep in mind, this does include R&D, so the single largest contract in here is the Joint Strike Fighter, which some people would say is not exactly a services contract. I don't make the rules for FPDS. I only deal with the data that comes out of it. Nonetheless, you'll recognize some of the names on this chart. I mentioned at the beginning that while this is not the industrial base that we think of, if you look down the names, you'll see that many of these companies do actually come into that play. We have in the report a series of additional breakdowns of this. I'm not going to walk you through them. We have the top 20 contractors for each of the activity categories on page 22 and 23. We have the top 20 by customer on page 25. We have the top DOD contractors, the top NASA, DOE, and DHS contractors on pages 26, 27, 28, and 29. I should point out it's our intention actually to issue supplemental reports to this. We're going to put out in December a DOD-only report with substantial additional data, and then it's our plan to put out separate reports for each of the other three agencies that have large roles here, that is Energy, NASA, and Homeland Security, so that those of you who live on those agencies will have better data that you can get to from that area. And then finally, our report card on who's screwing up in the data submission. This is the departments and agencies that lack entries in either the question of competition or the type of funding, that is fixed price, cost reimbursement, et cetera. And you see that actually the Defense Department is only missing its competition data in about 3,400 of 162,000 contract actions, or about 2%, and on 2,200 in terms of the funding scheme, or about 1%, for a total of about 3%, and we do eliminate the duplicates. There are some people who left both of those blank. We also have in our competition category a surprising number of entries that showed zero bidders, which I'm still baffled as to how it is you award a contract if you had no bids. But nonetheless, some seem to have managed to have done. I assume it means zero bidders in addition to the one who got the award, but I have no way of actually verifying that from the data perspective. You'll see that some other agencies, Department of Homeland Security, for instance, has about 22% that fails to include one or the other of these data entries in their categories here. This puts us at a substantial disadvantage when doing comparative analysis across agencies, and we hope that this report card will spur in at least one or more cases some actions by those agencies to do a little bit better job of reporting. I'm encouraged, I must say, one of the things that the current administration has done is they have begun to use the Federal Procurement Data System actually as a management tool to track performance by agencies in response to the President's March 4th, 2009 memorandum on government contracting. And this is really encouraging to me because the one thing I'm absolutely certain of is that data do get better if you use them. And using them for performance-related judgments will certainly serve to bolster the data. So now I'm back to my front. I'm happy to open up the floor to questions. Greg will know all the answers, so he will join me in coming out this. I want to thank you all for your attention, your interest in this report. We know that this is an area that gets very little service and attention by most in the business. It's kind of viewed as kind of a sidebar. We love this stuff. and are really grateful for the opportunity to be able to play this out to you. And given that it's $280 billion a year, it's not a trivial exercise in terms of what the government's spending its money on. We look forward to the day where there will actually be a category in FPDS that says, what did you get for your money? Because we think that's one of the most interesting questions. Just on any given contract, there's no question in my mind that we're getting value for money. But when you add it all up and you try to say, okay, what did the government actually get for that $280 billion, it's very hard to describe from our perspective. And one of the reasons we continue to shine light on this is because we want to encourage continued movement in that regard. So with that, I'll call a stop to it. I'll throw the floor open for questions. Because this is being webcast as well as taped for those of you who want to go back and refresh your memories by watching it again, I'll ask that you wait until a microphone. Raise your hand. I'll identify you. We'll bring a microphone to you. Wait till the microphone gets there. State your name and your affiliation, and then have at us. So any questions from the floor? Let's start here in the left, and then I'll go to the middle.
At some point in the analysis, will you go through and prune out what you consider to be, I will say, the distortions in the data? Because, it's, as you raised yourself, the F-35 might actually not fall in this box. And if you pulled it out, it might actually change the corporation's ranking and things like that.
We've wrestled with that question of how to deal with the large R&D contracts and the distortions that brings you into play. I think what we've concluded is that you can't do it based on R&D alone, because clearly there are a number of R&D contracts that do constitute something closer to genuine services, if you will, and B, on dollar value alone. Because of the nature of some of the support, some of what is clearly support contract being categorized as R&D. So as of this time, we don't really have a methodology for undertaking that other than a line item by line item, and with 700,000 contract actions, that's going to be more than we probably will undertake. Nonetheless, it does distort the data here, and of course it distorts the data for everybody. So it's something I think we'll continue to look at. Greg, do you have anything you want to add to that?
If you have any specific criteria you want to suggest, I'd be happy to talk to you afterwards.
Yes, we are always eager to have additional research assistance as we go through this process. I think we had one in the middle here.
Arno de Borgraaf, CSIS. Dave, this is very impressive, all new to me, and I was wondering to what extent DOD has conducted a similar survey and how close the two surveys would be.
As to DOD's own survey, in fact, a number of you probably have been in this basement auditorium when Ash Carter, the Undersecretary for Acquisition, Technology, and Logistics, has commented that his initiatives are designed to get at the couple of hundred billion that DOD spends on services, as well as the money that DOD spends under contract for products and production. And so they have undertaken a similar effort to get their arms around it. We have actually compared our own methodology, our own taxonomy of accounting against theirs. We can track from theirs to ours. So actually, I don't know that DOD has put out a lot of public data in terms of how they break down their categories, but you've probably heard Dr. Carter mention $52 billion in knowledge management services. There's a substantial overlap between what we have, professional administrative and management services, and some of what we have in R&D to what they have in their knowledge management services category. But we can, I think, begin to crosswalk and track by FPDS service category so that we can do a crosswalk back and forth with what DOD has done. And as they put out public data, we'll make sure that we can compare and track it, because I think that's extremely relevant. When we put out our DOD report, we'll probably comment on this a little bit more. Again, part of our value is in being able to, for the federal government to be able to use this data, as well as for those of you in the room. And if we can't crosswalk to what they're seeing, it makes it more difficult for them. So thank you for that. In the back here.
Good morning, David. For the room, my name's Tanya Speed, and I am with an organization called Mid-Tier Advocacy. I'm a principal of my own company called Washington Premier Consulting, I am very excited about all that I've heard this morning in respect to breaking down the tiers within the business community that do actually contract with our government, particularly in the small business realm leading up to this this size of mid-tier or mid-companies. What are your thresholds in terms of the categories? One of the things that our organization struggles with is the definition of small versus then the mid-size, those that have grown outside of the NAICS codes who find themselves in that full and open space competing against the very large primes. As you know, small business doesn't have a mid-tier category. Could you comment a little bit more on the thresholds?
We use the definitions that the federal government uses. Now, of course, those of you who live in the area of graduation from small business know that there's more than one definition for more than one category from more than one agency. And for purposes of the data here, we basically track with the entries in the federal procurement data system. There are two very significant questions that arise from this, though. One is, in fact, the incentives and disincentives to actually graduate from the small business world into non-small business, if you will. And I don't think there's ever been any thorough study of the impact on companies of that graduation. My suspicion is that the survival rate just above that threshold is substantially less than the survival rate just below that threshold. That would be my guess. And so, but there's not, as far as I know, been no good data analysis of that for the federal government. The second is really whether or not there's any policy framework that makes any sense for mid-sized companies. And this is one we've struggled with. I think some years ago, the Professional Services Council and the U.S. Chamber of Commerce sponsored an event where we explored this issue in some depth. And my memory is we came to the conclusion that there are many, many conclusions that one can come to on this process, depending on where you sit. But it's very difficult for me to conceive of what a policy framework would be for the federal government to operate under with respect to mid-sized companies. There's a popular view, and I think it's very supported by anecdote, I'm not quite sure if it's supported by data, that innovation tends to come from companies in this size range, if you will. And I don't know whether this is just technical innovation or whether it's process innovation as well, but there's certainly a lot of great stories of that kind of thing. And if you look at the acquisition targets of the large companies, this is generally who they tend to be going after. Whether that's for innovation purposes, whether it's for access to customers, whether it's for cleared individuals or talent pools or all of the above and additional reasons. Again, there's not been really enough study on this. I think it's an area that's ripe for a lot of further analysis over time. Any other questions? I hope you enjoy the report. This is a page turner, so you know it will keep as it has for me. It will keep you up at night. If you need something to keep you going while the Steelers and the Patriots are boring you to tears on a Sunday night game, this is the book to do it. More importantly, I think we welcome your feedback. We welcome your input. This is an area we will continue to track over time. We'll continue to report on it. You'll always find updates, and I look forward to seeing many of you again when we bring you out the details for DOD and the other agencies in the coming months. Thank you very much for your attendance.